Hello, I'm Andy Richardson. Welcome to our latest World Cup countdown program as we build up to Qatar 2022, the Middle East's first ever World Cup, which kicks off in November. Each month, we focus on a different region, and this time, we are looking at Africa. Can Sadio Mane lead his Senegal side to more success after winning the Africa Cup of Nations? We'll take a look at how the Tunisian team is helping to unify the country as it struggles with an economic and political crisis. And we'll go back to South Africa, 12 years on from the continent's first and only World Cup. To guide us along the way, we've got football writer Usha Komagisha standing by for us in Morocco, where she's reporting on the Women's Africa Cup of Nations. And Maher Mazahi is with us, an Algerian football journalist who covers all aspects of the African game. Now, before we take a closer look at the African teams, let's show you what's been happening in the host nation. Some of the head coaches from the qualified teams have been in Qatar to take a closer look at what's in store for them. FIFA president Gianni Infantino said this so-called workshop was a chance for team representatives to raise any concerns they had about the event's organisation and to check out the stadiums, hotels and training facilities.
It's what you build for as an international team. To be in a World Cup is the greatest tournament. So we had, like a lot of teams, a challenging month in June, but we needed to look a lot of different players, and I think for our players, especially having got to the final of the Euros the year before, they had a very long season, so we have to learn from that, and we've got now two matches with Germany and Italy to prepare before we come here.
Obviously we've qualified later than the majority of the other teams, so it's still quite exciting for us, the realisation that we're going to take part in the World Cup. So we're all looking forward to it, and just being out here and experiencing, seeing the class of the hotels and seeing the standards and the facilities that we've got and that we're going to be coming into is really exciting for us.
It's been 3 years now that we've been coming, and from seeing the base camps to seeing the stadiums to seeing all the hard work that is behind the preparation for the World Cup, and now you can feel it. This is the latest stages, and we're all really excited. Now we got the 32 teams, something that we found out just a few weeks ago, and you can start feeling the excitement around it, and the preparations are going extremely well.
Well, just 4 months to go until the big kickoff. The 32 qualified teams have been divided into 8 groups of 4, with, of course, only one capable of going home with that trophy. 5 sides from Africa will be coming to Qatar, including Senegal, who won this year's Africa Cup of Nations, and they are the highest-ranked team on the continent. Well, our correspondent Nicholas Hack is in Dakar to tell us how Senegalese fans are feeling coming into the tournament. Apparently, all I have to do to start this report is throw a replica 1978 World Cup ball roughly in that direction.
Welcome to Senegal, country between the Atlantic Ocean and the edge of the Sahel. There's very little rainfall and it's terribly hot, so it's when the sun sets that people come out to play football on the beach. And it's in places like this that champions are made.
Meet 13-year-old Jamil Sow and his friends in downtown Dakar. There's no space for a football pitch, and so this is how they train. It's become a trend shared on social media in Senegal. Young players showing their skills away from the pitch, trying to stand out and get attention.
My dream is to become Sadio Mane. My dream is to become a famous football player and wear the jersey of the national team, like Mane, and score a lot of goals for the national team.
One of the top scorers in the English Premier League during his time with Liverpool, Bayern Munich's new signing is Senegal's hero. This is where Mane learned to play, in the village of Bambali in southern Senegal. In June, he came back to play an exhibition match with former players of the national team. Moussa Ndiaye was part of the squad that beat France, reaching the quarterfinal of the 2002 World Cup.
C'est l'avantage pour moi, pour ça.
The fact that we don't have green football pitches is actually an advantage, because when you play in the sand, you learn a lot of technique, like how to control the ball, to dribble, and make accurate passes. It makes us better players.
Senegal are the reigning African champions. The fans are hoping Qatar is a place where Senegal make history and become the first African team to reach a World Cup final. Nicholas Hawk, Al Jazeera, Dakar.
Okay, let's take a closer look at Senegal's group. They'll face the Netherlands in their first match, the Dutch returning after missing out on the last World Cup in Russia. They'll also play host Qatar and Ecuador. Let's bring in Usha Komagisha. Usha, do you think this could be the year that an African team gets beyond the quarterfinals, and could Senegal be the team to do it?
Absolutely. There's no better team that is in form right now more than Senegal on the African continent. The African champions, deservedly so. When you look at the squad that they have right now, you see a team that is very well oiled. It's a young squad. And also, you know, the fact that you have Aliou Cissé, he's been with the team for more than 7 years. He understands this particular group of set of players for the Teranga Lions. And you have Sadio Mane, you have Kalidou Koulibaly in the defense, you have Edward Mendy, you have Gana Gaye, and obviously you have, you know, this other set of players that are around to support in every department. So I think that they have a chance, and also looking at the group that they're in alongside, of course, the host Qatar, you have Ecuador and the Netherlands. It just, you know, seems like everything is coming in place for them. I think they have what it takes to go past the quarterfinals and actually even claim a place in the semifinals. And who knows from there? They could go to the final.
Maher, what do you make of the group Senegal have got? Being drawn against the hosts, that's a bit of a benefit, isn't it? Bearing in mind they're a top seed.
Yeah, exactly. I think them or the Netherlands will be favoured to make it into the knockout stages, with all due respect to Qatar and Ecuador. But I think Usher was right to speak about the fact that this is a young team, but they're also experienced. Remember, they were in the 2018 World Cup with the same coach, Aliou Cissé. And Aliou Cissé was actually very heavily criticized going into the previous Africa Cup of Nations, which Senegal won. He was criticized for not being the most tactical manager. But I would say that one of his main strengths is he's a really good man manager. Usher said that he knows his group well, and that's true. And if you look at the success of recent managers like Carlo Ancelotti or Zinedine Zidane, sometimes I think we tend to overrate the tactical aspect of managing. And it's actually about, can you get the team to really give it their all, 110%? And when it comes to that, I think Aliou Cissé is the perfect coach for the Teranga Lions. And I think that that's probably their best chance of making it to the next round.
OK, thanks for now, guys. We're back with you very soon. Now, while Mohamed Salah's Egypt failed to qualify along with Algeria, two North African sides did. We'll see how fans in Morocco are feeling shortly. But first, let's take a look at Tunisia. Supporters there say the tournament will provide them with a distraction from the ongoing political and economic crisis. Paul van der Werf reports.
Tunisia is a country with deep political divisions, but there's one thing that still unites people.
Football brings people together and they sympathize with each other. When a game is on, it's all they think about. They forget about politics and the things that are happening in the country. They forget about their problem.
We all support Tunisia, all of us. We forget about the faction supporting the president and the other supporting Nahda in politics. We keep football out of politics.
President Kais Saied dissolved parliament and sacked the government to rule by decree last year, a move the opposition has called a coup. Critics have labelled a new draft constitution as an attempt by Saied to expand his powers unlawfully. Tunisians have been left frustrated by years of political argument and economic stagnation.
The World Cup is the only thing that's left for us in Tunisia. It's the way out and the thing that brings everyone together, regardless of the differences we see in politics or our economic problems.
Qatar 2022 will be Tunisia's sixth appearance at a World Cup. They've never made it out of the group stage and have won just two games at the tournament. Fans in Tunis hope the country's large expat community in Doha will give the Eagles of Carthage an advantage this time round.
Hopefully our Tunisian community there will encourage the team, especially during the first matches.
Hopefully we can get out of the group stage. We've had enough of leaving early.
Achieving that won't be easy, with group games against defending champions France, as well as Denmark and Australia. Paul van der Werf, Al Jazeera.
Morocco may be through to their sixth World Cup, but some fans are worried their team will underperform in Qatar. Many blame coach Vahid Halilhodžić, but are divided on whether he should still be in charge come November.
Since firing him would cost a lot of money, we've got no other choice but to give him a chance.
I think it's problematic for this coach to participate in the Qatar World Cup. It's better if he leaves.
The Bosnian has been criticised for having a bad relationship with some top players. Chelsea midfielder Hakim Ziyech has refused to play for the national team while Halilhodžić is in charge. Despite that, fans are hopeful Morocco will field their best side in Doha.
They ended up with a tough group, and yes, it will not be easy for them to advance, but I really hope that based on the coach and their talents, they will give their country an honourable result in Qatar.
If Morocco do opt for a new coach, it'll be the third time Vahid Halilhodžić has been fired just months before the beginning of a World Cup. It happened in 2010 when he was with Ivory Coast and again in 2018 with Japan. Supporters want the Moroccan Football Federation to make a final decision once and for all.
If they replace him, I hope they find a Moroccan coach. We have people better than him.
Whatever the decision, the large Moroccan community in Qatar will no doubt make the team feel like they are playing at home. Abdelmonem Al-Amrani, Al Jazeera, Rabat.
Now, Tunisia have been drawn in Group D alongside the defending champions France, as well as Australia and Denmark, while Morocco, they face beaten 2018 finalist Croatia in their opening game of Group F. Then they come up against Belgium, followed by Canada, who are making just their second World Cup appearance. Now, those teams can expect some strong support here in Qatar, where there's a big North African expatriate community. Joining us now in the studio, Imid Ben Hajj Khalifa, the spokesman for the Tunisian community here in Qatar. Thanks for being with us. Give us an idea of the level of support Tunisia can expect at this World Cup.
Well, actually, we had the test in the Arab Cup here. We have seen how Tunisian fans were, actually, they were amazing supporting the team, especially in difficult moments. I remember against Oman, for example, they scored the equalizer and like 10 seconds after, the whole stadium was shaken, not by Omanis, but by Tunisians, like supporting the team and pushing them to react. 2 minutes after, we scored the second goal. So that's what we are expecting, like crazy, enthusiastic supporting of the team.
It's not a home World Cup, but do you think in some ways the players will, it will feel for them like it is a home World Cup playing here?
Of course. Actually, during the Arab Cup again, we faced that. We have seen how the people are like more than 40,000 in the stadiums. And here we have more than 35,000 living in Qatar. We have the support of Arab nations, of course, like Qataris, Algerians, Egyptians. Many of them will come not only to see the games, but to see the enthusiasm and this reaction that Tunisians are creating in the stadium and around it.
The country is obviously going through some pretty tough times at the moment, politically and economically. Is the national football team something that everyone can unify around?
Of course, as we said, like difficult moments create like great men, you know, and we always face these issues. But whenever it comes to sports, Tunisians are sports crazy.
Imed Ben Hajj Khalifa, thank you so much for your time. Now, all but one of Qatar's eight stadia have been built specifically for this World Cup, which begins on November the 21st. The new venues not only spread across a small geographic area, they're also architectural feats with a nod to sustainability. Natasha Ganane reports.
The stadiums of the first World Cup in the Middle East are architectural mirrors of Arab culture and heritage. A tent used by Bedouins. An ivory cap worn by pious Muslim boys and men. A gold-colored handicraft.
We've invested a lot during the design stage prior to the construction to make sure that whatever is being built for the tournament is being kept for the legacy and the local needs and even the local league needs.
Welcome to Lusail Stadium, home to the final match and the closing ceremony. Up to 86,000 fans will enjoy unobstructed views of the field. The roof contains 1.5 times the amount of steel as the Eiffel Tower.
In terms of an experience, purely from a sporting point of view, it'll be unprecedented and really spectacular. I can't emphasize that word enough.
Stadium 974 is the first venue in FIFA history that will disappear. The 974 recycled shipping containers will be dismantled to give way to additional waterfront development after the World Cup.
The beauty of this stadium is that it will have many more opening games in different countries and different cultures and in different locations, but also become, I think, the first stadium in the world which has this overpowering sustainability statement to it.
In addition to Stadium 974, seats and components of other venues will be donated to developing countries in need of sport infrastructure. But the nonprofit group Carbon Market Watch says to offset emissions, the material would need to be used multiple times, especially if shipped thousands of kilometers away. By using recycled materials, reducing construction costs, and developing green and living spaces near stadiums, Qatar is hoping it created monuments to sustainability that will inspire future World Cup hosts. Natasha Ghanem, Al Jazeera, Doha.
Let's go for a little trip back in time now. It's been more than a decade since South Africa hosted the first World Cup to be played on the African continent. A legacy of investments in grassroots football was promised. Our correspondent Famida Miller has been finding out if that was actually delivered.
This is Soweto, south of Johannesburg, which during the 2010 World Cup was a hub for many people living in this area. For aspiring players, the World Cup brought home the reality of a global event that was unreachable for many. But many years later, young players like these are still practicing in poor facilities.
After the World Cup, South Africa received about $40 million from FIFA for the development of the game locally. But players in clubs like this one say they haven't benefited at all.
We knew that the fund that was given to our mother body, SAFA, was supposed to be helping us. These areas were supposed to have been developed. Most of the areas, in fact, were supposed to have been developed. We haven't had a cent from that legacy fund. If there is something that they did about it, we want proof of it, because we don't see anything happening about the legacy trust fund that was given by FIFA to SAFA.
The South African FA closed the legacy trust this year after the money ran out. It says some of the money was used to fund junior national teams, women's soccer, and to build facilities. Even then, there are allegations that some of the costs were inflated. Young players remain motivated despite the challenges they face.
The World Cup was significant to me because it gave us hope, like at a time where like we were hyped up about soccer, everyone was talking about it, like the vuvuzelas were loud across the street. So we were looking forward to the World Cup, and when it happened at the time, it gave us hope and inspiration to play as well.
Looking at the state of where we come from, our dreams get crushed along the way. Like, there are a lot of obstacles, but then it's all in the mentality whether you want to achieve or not. So yeah, it is achievable.
Despite their ambition to play at professional level or for the national team, their coach says that's almost impossible simply because of a lack of support. And trying to work with players at development level in conditions like this makes it very challenging for any of these players to advance.
Isha, the legacy of any big tournament is quite a difficult thing to pin down, but what of any meaning was left behind by the World Cup in South Africa in 2010, do you think?
Well, if the South Africa Football Association say that they invested some of the money in developing women's football, then they've done a great job on that front. But looking at, the grassroots across the whole country, talking to a couple of people, it doesn't seem so. Away from, of course, the women's football. And I understand, why they are aggrieved and feeling that they were left out on that front. And I think that they should have done more. They can still do more. I mean, it's 10 years after, it's 12 years, actually, since the 2010 World Cup. And you get the feeling that, even the rest of the continent, away from, the vuvuzelas and the celebrations. And for example, the Sipiwe Shabalala goal, you know, that literally sent the whole continent vibrating. You don't feel that there was that deep legacy that, you know, we can remember and say in terms of continuity with that tournament.
Maha, do you think there's a desire to bring the World Cup back to Africa, and with the tournament now expanding to 48 teams from 2026, is it likely?
I think it's going to be much more difficult now with the expanded format of the World Cup to have 48 teams in a single country. We see even with the American bid of 2026, it's spread out across three countries. And I think that's going to be a little bit of an obstacle for Morocco, because ideally, if you wanted to have an only African World Cup, you could do Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia. There you could have the sporting infrastructure. It's a similar culture, and I think that could work, but the politics of it don't really work out. So we're hearing now rumors that there might be a Moroccan / Iberian bid with Portugal and Spain. So if the World Cup does return, it's probably going to be there.
Well, let's just go back to what's actually coming our way in Qatar in a few months' time. Cameroon are in Group G, along with Brazil, Serbia and Switzerland. Usha, Cameroon, of course, the first African team to reach the quarterfinals at a World Cup. Do you think they can get out of that group?
It's a very difficult group for the Indomitable Lions. And you're talking about a team that no longer has like a superstar face. With Cameroon, we're used to having big names, you know, Roger Miller, Rigobert Song, Samuel Eto'o, Patrick Mboma, you know, like a star player who can, you know, make a big change, you know, in a game and shift the momentum. But of course, you know, with all due respect to Vincent Aboubakar, the captain, who was incredible during the Africa Cup of Nations, he will definitely feel the weight of playing at the World Cup. But perhaps, you know, having the atmosphere that they have around the tournament, having, you know, Rigobert Song as the head coach, Samuel Eto'o as the federation president, you know, people who know a thing or two about playing at the World Cup will definitely invoke that lion spirit that we know Cameroon to have over the years. And I think perhaps that could be the edge that they'll bring into this World Cup. In 2017, no one expected them to win the Africa Cup of Nations in Gabon. And they went all the way to the final and stunned everyone and won, you know, the African crown. So I think they'll come into the World Cup with that kind of mindset. Of course, you know, you're playing against Brazil, who are one of the title contenders in Qatar. But who knows? They know a thing or two about making upsets at the World Cup.
They certainly do. Let's take a look at Ghana's group, back with their old friends Uruguay in Group H. Ghana still hurting after that Luis Suarez handball back in 2010. That stopped them from reaching the semi-finals. They'll also face Cristiano Ronaldo's Portugal side and South Korea. Maha, is that game against Uruguay still remembered through the African continent?
Yeah, I think it's collectively scarred all of us Africans. We were this close to getting to a semi-final. It's a different generation of players as well. That 2010 team was, you know, Kevin Prince-Boateng, Asamoah Gyan, who missed that crucial penalty. You know, it's a completely new generation of players. They're a younger team, but they're a team. You know, all these, this generation of players, players like Mohamed Kudus at Ajax, Kamaldeen Sulemana at Rennes, the Ayew brothers were there and they'll remember it. But the rest of the younger generation, they'll have watched that match on television. And I think it will be in the corner of their minds. They'll be wanting revenge. But it's not exactly a team that was affected or scarred by the elimination. They'll just remember it and I think be extra motivated.
Usha, Ghana bringing in a homegrown coach in Otto Addo. And that seems to be a bit of a trend with the teams that have qualified. Four out of the five teams do have African coaches. Has that been a positive development in the last few years?
Well, Andy, you ask a very good question, because we know that in the history of the World Cup, and I'm talking 96 years, absolutely no foreign coach has won the World Cup. So if an African team wants to win the World Cup, they'll have to go with a homegrown coach. And obviously, it brings a whole different feel. Otto Addo understands the culture of Ghana. You talk about Aliou Cissé. For me, I feel that sometimes you need that touch, you know, in the dressing room. When things, you know, go south, you're not, you know, speaking English or French in the dressing room. You're speaking, if in the case of Ghana, you're speaking Chui, or in Senegal, you're speaking Wolof to the players, you know, even on the touchline, so that they can, you know, get that feeling and of pride when they're representing their country. And I feel that those things, you know, make a huge difference at big tournaments like the World Cup.
OK, fantastic stuff. Thank you so much to our guests, Usha Komagisha and Maha Mazahi. Senegal will have the honour of playing in the very first match of this World Cup. Mane and co will take on the Netherlands at Doha's Al Thamama Stadium on November the 21st. Kick-off at 1 p.m. local time. Hopefully in that game, Senegal can set the tone for the rest of Africa's competing nations. Next month, we'll be switching continents to focus on European teams that will be heading to Qatar as we get ever closer to the main event. And of course, Al Jazeera will keep you right up to date every step of the way.